Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of RealityCast, Kat Steffel will tell a story that shows how hard it is still for people to deal with sexual assault appropriately. The VA story causes the mainstream right to become a bunch of rape truthers, and parents in Northern California throw a fit over sex education. Gamergate is sputtering out as members are beginning to realize no one buys that ethics in journalism line, but the whole thing has had the side benefit of bringing attention to the issue of sexism in gaming. Feminist Frequency brought together a number of men to help highlight the ways that they are privileged in gaming just by being male.
I can choose to remain completely oblivious or indifferent to the harassment that many women face in gaming spaces.
I am never told that video games or the surrounding culture is not intended for me because I am male.
I can publicly post my username, gamertag, or contact information online without having to fear being stalked or sexually harassed because of my gender.
I will never be asked to prove my gaming cred simply because of my gender.
If I enthusiastically express my fondness for video games, no one will automatically assume I'm faking my interest just to get attention from other gamers.
To be clear, no one is saying it's wrong to be able to have these experiences, by and large. We just want women to have the same right to fire up a video game without immediately being told to prove yourself or show your genitals off. Over the years I've been doing this podcast, there's been one trend I actually kind of find a bit surprising, and of course, very, very troubling, which is the mainstreaming of fringe so-called men's rights thinking into the mainstream conservative movement. To be clear, mainstream conservatism has always been brutally sexist. And there's always been a few characters in it, like George Will, who were quick to make excuses for rapists and sexual harassers. By the early 21st century, some of the really grotesque misogyny of the right that openly excuses sexual and gender violence has really been pushed to the margins. Most anti-feminist energy was spent attacking reproductive rights and efforts to end workplace discrimination, not in shielding men who commit violence against women. Instead, for that, you have the so-called men's rights movement, which is mostly relegated online where most of the participants can remain anonymous, which is important when you're someone who is highly invested in making it harder to prosecute rape and domestic violence. Their activism is mostly about flooding spaces where people are trying to talk about feminism to bolster the illusion that there's legitimate controversy over whether rape and domestic violence are serious crimes. They, for reasons of their own, many of which I suspect are deeply unsavory, want people to believe that many to most women who speak out about being victims are lying. They are sleazy, woman-hating trolls. But now it seems like they're being treated like a legitimate target demo for the conservative pundits. Fox News has generally been drifting in the direction of just more and more unhinged sexist blathering lately. But this UVA rape story situation has really just brought this crap to a boil. The unchecked glee at being given an excuse to push the myth that false accusations are more common than they are is really repulsive. And the way this is being used to discredit the efforts of anti-rape activists is generally appalling. I mean, this is rape. When Todd Akin spouted off about legitimate rape, most conservatives were quick to distance themselves from him. Now I'd worry they'd throw him a parade. Take, for instance, Tammy Bruce going full-blown rape denialist on Fox News.
Almost a romanticizing of victimhood. You know, look, authentic feminists, we know violence against women happens. We want it to stop. But there has now been a movement over the last decade or so, like the War on Women meme, to romanticize being a victim. And I think that that's equally as
dangerous. I don't think anybody wants to romanticize being a victim, but I want to remind you.
Authentic feminists. Ugh. For those who don't know, this is a really common anti-feminist tactic to call yourself the real feminist so that people who aren't up on all the names and personalities and activism and media get confused and think that this is a person who means well criticizing other feminists. You get it with the Susan B. Anthony list, an anti-woman, anti-choice organization, or the Independent Women's Foundation, which is not actually in support of female independence. Or with personalities like Christina Hoff Sommers or Tammy Bruce here, who call themselves feminists, but think that every argument in favor of women's equality is bunk. That unwillingness to correctly identify themselves so viewers know what they're seeing shows the levels of honesty we're working with here, which is at sub-zero levels. Anyway, you usually hear the claim that women make up rape to get back at a man for dumping them, but this is a newer strategy. Instead of exploiting the stereotype of the vindictive witch, the stereotype being employed here is the attention whore, a phase thrown these days at any woman who believes she has value outside of being quiet and scrubbing things. Attention is a thing for men only, I guess? What's frustrating about these stereotypes is that if you point out they are stereotypes, right-wingers simply note that it has happened once or twice before that some woman did something wrong. As long as one woman lied that one time, that means we can throw out the overwhelming evidence that shows that most women tell the truth most of the time. It's idiotic. On top of accusing victims of lying for attention, conservative commentators were also interested in accusing researchers of inflating sexual assault statistics because of nefarious unnamed agendas, such as Rich Lowry on ABC News denying research that shows a 1 in 5 sexual assault rate on campus.
The statistic is based on a survey that includes attempted forced kissing as sexual assault.
That is not a real number.
It's an advocacy.
Do you want
number.
Me to attempt to kiss you? Can I kiss you here?
Let's talk about
will?
This later,
sexual
man. It's not a crime that the police are going to be involved in and prosecute.
Squeaking about the police is a way to confuse the issue. Shoplifting isn't the same as home invasion. But you'd think that I was off my nut if I said that means that shoplifting isn't a crime. This is what I mean by conservatives going full men's rights. We're not talking about someone trying to sneak a kiss and then being rejected. In fact, the researchers specifically excluded what they call verbal or emotional coercion from their definition of sexual assault. So a guy who whines until you kiss him was classified as a creep, but not an assailant. The survey also distinguishes by severity of sexual assault, openly acknowledging that being forced to kiss someone is not the same as being raped. So his concerns were addressed if he had bothered to read the study. But for all that Lowry is accusing the White House and the Rolling Stone of having an agenda, I think he has a much bigger and more obvious agenda.
So explosive, you have to be certain it's right. And Rolling Stone didn't do basic fact-checking here. I believe because they had an agenda to portray UVA as this bastion of white male privilege where basically rapists rule the social life. And the damage will never be undone. And I think if there's any justice in the world, Rolling Stone would have to give up covering music and become the alumni magazine of the University of Virginia.
So Lowry has an agenda, and it's pretty clearly to conceal the ugly realities of male-dominated campus life, particularly in the Greek system. He scolds about covering bases, but refuses to do it. He told an easily fact-checked lie about the sexual assault research. He argues that a discrepancy in one victim's story somehow means the overall portrait of campus is wrong. But if you actually bother to read the story, you'll find there's multiple accounts that really do show a culture that just kind of is a sexist culture. In fact, Lowry himself is an example of the sexist culture, using his perch on TV to shield rapists from justice by scaring victims out of speaking out. So yeah, if you're against agendas, start at home, jerk. I'd like to welcome Kat Steffel to the program. Kat is a journalist who recently published a piece in Talking Points Memo about a rape case in New Orleans that exposed the fault lines in a rapidly gentrifying community. Welcome to RealityCast, Kat.
Thanks for having me, Amanda.
So let's start from the beginning. What are the basic details of the rape case you went to New Orleans to investigate?
Well, I actually didn't go to New Orleans to investigate the rape case. I went on vacation and was planning on going to this bar and found out that it had been closed temporarily or its policy had been changed, and then sort of started looking into why and discovered that it was because a sexual assault had happened there. The details of it are actually pretty rare. I would say they're unusually solid because there's a lot of security footage at the club. So basically, a woman, a 31-year-old woman, was there for some day drinking and sunbathing. The club has a pool. That's what it's known for. It's called the Country Club. And the pool has a clothing optional policy. So she would go during the days. She'd been going for maybe a few months. Go during the days to get a tan, even her tan lines, drink some mimosas. And that's what she did until she blacked out. Not sure why yet in terms of the investigation, but she blacked out and woke up at home without her car and with some strange lubricant she didn't recognize on her bed and bruises everywhere. So she went back to the club, just mostly like looking for her car, wondering what happened. And some female security employee, some female employees of the bar showed her the security footage, helped her look over it together. And between that and eyewitness reports that came out later, she had sex with at least two men on the premises of the club and went home with a third wearing nothing but a towel.
Really? Wow. So she feels that these experiences constitute a sexual assault.
Yeah, she doesn't remember. She couldn't consent, whether she was drugged or she just overdid it drinking. The statute is the same in Louisiana. They're both simple rapes.
And so the club, which is the name of the place that this alleged rape took place, has been charged by the city for obscene, lewd, sexually indecent, immoral, and improper conduct in the wake of this. Why did this happen?
People aren't sure. Essentially, it was city attorney trying to enlist the liquor licensing agency to revoke their liquor license over this incident. There have been complaints in the neighborhood about, you know, noise and the overflow of drunk, naked people in the street. But among people who live in New Orleans believe that the rules are selectively applied, especially in neighborhoods that are changing because of gentrification. So, you know, places that have operated for 40 years become big New Orleans institutions, part of the tradition and legacy of the city are just now being cracked down on for things, you know, it's not all nudity. They're also getting cracked down for to-go cups, which are part of the fun of going to New Orleans, is that you don't have to finish your beer. You can walk out in the street with it. And live music, which is obviously a huge part of the city's draw.
And so it seems that this was about more than just, it seems, I don't want to actually accuse anybody of anything. Let me put it this way. It seems a lot of people in the neighborhood think that this rape case is being used as a pretense to attack not just this bar, but sort of the traditional libertine culture of New Orleans, right?
That's definitely the feeling. People are blaming neighbors, older neighbors with kids who didn't know what they were in for when they moved to the neighborhood. But sort of what's more glaring, and what actually the survivor in this particular case was sort of the first one to point out publicly, the crackdown, the way it happened at the country club was they were forced to, in order to keep their liquor license, they had to revoke the clothing optional policy and require clothing, which seems to imply that it was the fact that it was the nudity is to blame in this alleged assault and not the rapist. And the woman has, her name is Maria Treme. She's spoken out a lot about that, and she likened it to banning short skirts.
Yeah, I thought one of the interesting things about it is that the alleged rape victim seems very outspoken about how wrong this approach is. Can you kind of talk some more about that?
Yeah, she's a really incredible woman, and I think it was a real wake-up call for her in terms of feminism and gender relations. Just watching the reactions to her story really radicalized her, I would say. And when a lot of other women would have been horrified by the reactions and crawled back into bed, she sort of doubled down in a way that is really impressive and sort of important about the fact that she's become an activist and you know, an advocate for other women, is that I think, especially with the UVA case in the news right now, there's sort of this sense that victims are actually activists who have an agenda and they're retrofitting traumatic incidents to fit their, some like feminist conspiracy. But what's great about Maria and what she really illustrates is that she wasn't really, I mean, she was a feminist, but she didn't really care about these issues in an active way before it happened to her. And she spoke out not for attention, but just to find her car. You know, her investigation was not going well with the police, and she didn't know what to do. She didn't know who to talk to. She emailed, like late at night, desperately emailed a local investigative reporter, and he sort of showed how, to what extent the cops had messed up her case, including most importantly by failing to get her to the hospital in time to detect a date rape drug. And so that's why she, you know, that's why she spoke out, was just to get some help. And, but when she saw the reactions to the story, she was outraged, to see herself being blamed and to see nudity being blamed. She's just extremely self-assured. And so she doesn't blame herself. And through this event became aware of to what extent the culture blames her and other people blame her. And that was eye-opening.
Yeah, it's, I think your story did a really good job of kind of showing how this rape case has kind of become, like, how politicized it is. Like, on one hand, you have all these kind of gentrifying New Orleans types that want to come in and enjoy New Orleans, but want to sort of clean up all the New Orleansness of it, the loudness, the drunkenness, the sexiness of it. And then you have the people that are protective of that. And both sides seem to be exploiting this case. So you have the anti-drunk, loud people, like the people that want to clean up the city, saying that this case shows why that has to happen. And then you have the people that want to defend this city's culture, like blaming this rape victim for it.
Exactly. That was what was super compelling about this story to me. It was just that, it's a precious space that a lot of people, for a lot of different reasons, feel very protective over. But at the end of the day, all of them threw Maria and women and rape victims under the bus. People were so willing to so just deprioritize her experience and her testimony in order to save these sort of vague cultural entities, which just, it really, for me as a journalist and as a feminist, I had always been pretty skeptical of conversations about rape culture and how, you know, I wasn't quick to condemn fraternities, for example. But if you're seeing the same sort of cultural resistance, even among this allegedly progressive set, then I do think that it just further confirmed that there is some strain of misogyny that gets expressed when women speak out about bad things that happen to them. And Maria shows why women can't afford to let that strain stop them from speaking out, both because her investigation wouldn't have gone anywhere, and because other women wouldn't have seen that you can come forward.
And so do you think that, I mean, it's easy to be mad at the people, and I am definitely mad at the people that are blaming Maria for the attacks on the club and for the sort of partying atmosphere. But how much blame do you put for the situation on the people that are using this as kind of a pretense to sort of clean up the city?
I think from a municipal perspective, that mostly comes from a combination of ignorance and allegiance to really civically engaged homeowners. So I think that the city attorney is scrambling and acting in the interest of the people who call their city attorney and people who call their local legislators. So I'm not sure to what extent that is part of the cultural issues at stake. I don't think that I would not be quick to condemn that ordinance as like malicious misogyny because it happened to be slut shaming, but it definitely did send a message that the rape isn't the problem and rapists aren't the problem, that then more people can just latch onto.
So my guest today has been Kat Steffel. You can read her piece titled "How a Woman's Rape at a Gay Nude Bar Sparked a Battle Over New Orleans' Libertine Soul" at Talking Points Memo. Thanks so much for coming on to RealityCast, Kat.
Thanks. It was great. Thanks for having me.
One of the greatest rhetorical coups for the right in the last decade is convincing so many people that Planned Parenthood is not actually a boring old family planning clinic for checkups and condoms, but some kind of exotic sex emporium where all manner of demented perversions take place. It's gotten to the point where the mere name of Planned Parenthood sends some conservatives around the bend. It reminds me, honestly, of the way that religious right folks in the 80s were so scared of the game Dungeons and Dragons that merely saying the name would cause them to freak out. Or the way that the fear of satanic messages in music would make people afraid to even touch rock records. It's completely out of control. And now this hysteria is touching a high school in the East Bay area of California.
Some Bay Area parents say they aren't being prude. They're angry about who is teaching their kids. The program has been used to teach freshmen in Lafayette for years.
KPIX5's Dolly and went to find out what has parents so upset. Doc?
Well, Alan, it's Planned Parenthood. They spent about a week in the district teaching freshmen sex education, and that's got some parents really worried about it. They plan to come to a meeting here tonight at the school board telling the district to kick Planned Parenthood out of the district.
That this has been taught for a decade without problem is your first clue as to what the issue is here. We're dealing with a relatively recent invention, this new belief that Planned Parenthood is the devil. A few years ago, they weren't really a particularly controversial organization outside of the abortion stuff. But now, every time you turn around, some right-wing nut is melting down at the very idea that you might actually bring an expert in to handle sex education. I think what's going on here, honestly, is that as contraception use improves and pregnancy rates are going down, conservatives are beginning to panic, realizing that attacks on abortion aren't enough. And if they want people to be punished for sex, they're going to have to attack contraception too. And they're accomplishing this goal by equating Planned Parenthood with sex itself and sending prudish adults around the bend. And that's exactly what's going on here, even as parents claim it's not about being prudish.
I feel outraged. I feel sad. I feel worried for the future of these kids.
Camille Giglio speaks for the newly formed Noise Coalition and a parent of the Akalani's Union High School District. She wants Planned Parenthood out of the high schools.
It is a business that sells sex. Its way to get clientele is to sexualize young people and turn them into lifelong clients.
I don't even know if I need to add more to this. Really, the notion that one could expect to have a life unencumbered by sexual urges if but for Planned Parenthood showing you what a condom looks like is a theory easily debunked by a brief glimpse at all of human history. Though I do always wish I could get people who say this sort of thing to sit down and tell me about their own sexual histories. Is it that they really truly only had sex a handful of times for the purpose of procreation and think that's a norm everyone else is deviating from? Or are they just so blinded by their own hypocritical hysteria that it never occurred to them that everyone else is just as entitled to sex for pleasure as they are? I am insatiably curious for answers, but I suspect I'll never get them. But you can take heart, folks, because this supposed organization and supposed coalition doesn't seem very big, even as it's very loud.
The district has partnered with Planned Parenthood for 10 years. So far this semester, he says only one student has opted out of the class.
Staff and the governing board believe that Planned Parenthood does an excellent job and the concerns that raised are not merited.
The students and parents we talked to at Akalani's high school have no problem with who's teaching sex ed.
I never felt like Planned Parenthood was either promoting their own services or encouraging us to have sex or anything like that.
I am a Catholic, yes. I don't see any problem with it.
The one parent who opted out her daughter from the sex ed class in the district, she sent me an email earlier saying she wants the district to be more transparent. The district is responding that it is being very transparent. They sent out notices to the parents before the class.
All this fuss resulted in one parent pulling her kid. One. That's hardly what I'd call some kind of groundswell. Not that it would be acceptable if it were, of course, because no amount of wishful thinking is going to make kids somehow asexual, but that the parents here are by and large being responsible adults makes this controversy even sillier. But Fox News' website is trying to keep this alive, unfortunately, and even making a fuss over the fact that the materials emphasize consent. The argument is that by teaching kids to communicate with partners about sex, that's somehow endorsing sex. I guess sex is somehow less wrong in their eyes if it's shameful and or coercive. Hey, as long as you're crying afterwards, it's a win, I guess. But seriously, good on Planned Parenthood for considering consent as an important issue as contraception. I think this message from a 90s house band, Latour, is still relevant.
Have you noticed that people are still having sex? All the denouncement had absolutely no effect. Parents and counselors constantly scorn them, but people are still having sex and nothing seems to stop them.
And now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts, Let's Get Stupid edition. CNN decided to spend time interviewing the least relevant person in the entire universe on the subject of sexual assault, so-called Princeton mom Susan Patton. Unsurprisingly, her bizarre hyper-misogyny was repulsive.
But I think what makes this conversation so particularly prickly is the definition of rape. It no longer is when a woman is violated at the point of a gun or knife. We're now talking about or identifying as rape what really is a clumsy hookup melodrama or a fumbled attempt at a kiss or a caress.
You
how could that
that's
possibly
all it is?
That's in many cases, that's what it is. And we just heard the statistics that this is with a friend, this is in your own home, this is...
Most rapes happen between people who know each other.
I wish I could say she's an outlier, but she's spouting nonsense that's all too common. Sadly, one of the reasons we have such an ongoing rape problem is just this. Parents who think it's perfectly fine to teach their boys that forcing sex on women doesn't count as rape as long as you learn her name first.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.